Welcome to Business Compass, a podcast brought to you by Ice & Harrison Solicitors. My name is Richard Coulthard, and we advise business and property investors across the country. The purpose of this podcast is to give you practical insights from business leaders in your field to help you along the business journey. We'll be covering topics such as entrepreneurship, business strategy, business growth, marketing, and business development to help you in your business. Sit back, relax, and listen to the Business Compass, giving your business direction. This episode, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Sarah Poskett, a property investor who's built a multi-million pound property portfolio from scratch, starting from when she was in university. Really think any property investors are going to get some great tips and wisdom from her journey and her mistakes and the challenges that she's faced during her journey. So sit back and enjoy. So Sarah, thanks for coming in today and doing this podcast. Obviously, we've worked together now probably 7 or 8 years, and what I've always admired is your drive to build a portfolio, the versatility of your approach to property, but also that you started at such a young age. Where'd that drive, where'd that ambition, where'd that property journey start, I suppose?
Thanks, Richard. So it's quite a difficult question to answer in terms of where does drive and ambition come from. It's not something I can probably really give you an answer today, but certainly for me, I grew up, I was the daughter of a builder from a very young, early age. So I understood very quickly how you could buy a property and add value to a property and build your wealth that way. We always lived in that house on the street that was being renovated. Yeah, I thought it was completely normal to be living in a property with no carpets and pipes hanging off the walls. That was just completely the norm to me. But that obviously from a very early age opened my eyes up to, you know, what was possible to do. And when I went on to university, it became clear to me after my second year at uni that I really wanted to get into property for myself. Yes, I was studying a degree to, you know, have a full-time career, but actually I saw myself more having my own business at some point in the future. So when I left university, I worked full-time, and during that time I worked freelance for landlords in the area. I really wanted to learn more about property, renting property out, how does it actually work. So I worked for these landlords, I helped them find tenants, I helped them refurbish the properties, get them up to a higher standard so that the landlords could rent them out for more money, as well as, you know, them being easier to rent out. And I was really, really determined to not live in rented accommodation for very long. I wanted to buy my own property. And this was back in 2006, so house prices were sky high. So it wasn't an option at the time. But, you know, I just started saving as much money as I could. So I had my full-time job. I was working for these landlords on the side. I also set up a little sort of mini business on the side where I was buying and selling vintage clothing, which was very popular at the time. And I was also that person at work that if there was any ever overtime available, I took it. So I was just stashing as much money as I possibly could to get to a point where I could buy my first property, which I did when I was 22. And I think a lot of that drive since then has come from the fact that when I bought that first property, when I was 22, it was a property that had been repossessed. So the person that had the property before me had only bought it 18 months prior. They'd bought it for £275,000. I went to view this property. It was on the market for £130,000. It had been repossessed by the bank. So this was around 2007, 2008.
Was this pre-crash, or was it about the time of crash?
So this was at the crash.
Right.
So with this particular property, you know, even at £130,000 at the time, I still couldn't afford, you know, to buy it. But, you know, I was determined that, you know, literally every week on a Friday, I used to ring Hunter's estate agents and I'd ring and say, you know, my offer's still here. You know, will you speak to the bank and see if they'll consider my offer? And I did this for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And eventually they accepted my offer
Because no one was buying at that time. It was, you know, in hindsight, it was clearly the right decision. But at the time, were you quite nervous about this? Property crash, it was very uncertain, you know.
It was certainly one of the challenges at the time that, you know, I was 22 and essentially nearly everybody around me was saying, what are you doing buying a property? You're crazy, don't do it. But, you know, I'd spent a couple of years reading, doing my research, working with these landlords. You know, you pick up on things that other people that are doing what you want to do and learning. And I thought, you know, this property was worth, you know, 275,000 only 18 months ago. It will get up to that value at some point. And I thought, you know, if I buy this property, the plan was to be a living landlord. So I would move into the property, rent the rooms out, so that I would then start to build up that income. And the idea at the time was to rent the rooms out and save up money to for a deposit to buy the next one eventually. But actually what happened was 6 months after I'd bought the property, I got made redundant. You know, and that, for anybody that's been made redundant, but especially in the heart of such a deep recession like that, it was really, really tough because there was no jobs out there in the industry that I was working in at the time. I was working in environmental engineering. So we were the first to be hit because it was all the developers we were working for at the time. But actually what that did is that instilled even deeper to me that what I'd done was the right decision for me, because I had these other bedrooms rented out at the time, which they paid the mortgage, that money paid all my outgoings. You know, yes, okay, I didn't have any money left over to do anything fun with, but I didn't have to worry. So the colleagues I'd worked with who'd also lost their jobs, you know, it was months and months and months and months, sometimes up to a year, that they found employment and they were really, really struggling, you know, financially. But what that did is that taught me a massive lesson that actually I could use property to provide that security. Like for me, that's one of the key positives that property provides for me. It's that security of knowing that, you know, we no longer really live in a world where people are in employment with the same company for 30, 40 years and there's that security. You know, I was working for this company, I'd done a great job, but that was it, you know, 2 months and you're out and that was it, and I'd been made redundant. So that then further just drove me to say to myself, right, you've got to get more property. Yeah, you want to get your career back on track. But I couldn't control what was going on in the world with the job market and everything that was going on there. But what I can control is building those assets and securing my future.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything that you just said there really shows a sort of entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, you said the vintage clothing line and what have you. And then you have the challenge of the recession and things like that. When do you then get to acquire your next one? And how long, what's the gap timeline wise?
So that was quite a while. It was a lot longer than I'd envisaged because, as I say, the plan was to use the income from those rooms to collect a deposit to buy the next property. But, you know, I was out of work for a while and then I ended up going and working over in Northern Ireland for a year, but it was on a contract basis. So I only knew a week in advance whether I'd, you know, work secured. So I couldn't even contemplate trying to get a mortgage to buy another property, even if I had the money, because I had no permanent income at that time. So it was about 2 or 3 years before I bought my next property. And that particular property, the plan was to buy it and flip it. So sort of produce a little bit of extra money that then I was hoping to maybe then buy two properties from it. But again, this was around 2013, and the housing market, I mean, that's like 5 years afterwards, it still hadn't really bounced back and I just couldn't sell this property.
And I know at that time, actually, there was the whole mortgage market review and there was some regulatory changes and things like that, which actually impacted on getting finance and things like that. I suppose that the one of the messages I'm taking from this, and a lot of people aspire to this, which is they see property as it's a passive income. And I think you'll probably tell us later on, it's not quite passive in the way people envisage it to be. But I think that's why a lot of people aspire to get into property, because as you say, you went through a difficult time in terms of your employment, but you had that baseline of income from rentals. thereafter. So you get your second property in 2013, and with the aim of flipping it. And is that not what happened in the end, or?
No, so I tried to sell the property and I just couldn't sell it. I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing. Now I look back and I know exactly what I did wrong with that property and how I'd do it differently, but also it was a different market then anyway. So what I did was I actually moved into the property. It was a much smaller property, so financially it made sense for me to move out of the first property I bought, which was essentially a HMO, a house of multiple occupancy, and got that up and running properly, 5 bedrooms, licensed, you know, really look at and treat that as a business in itself. And then I moved into this smaller property for about 18 months. And what that allowed me to do, you know, I did focus on my career during that period and I was earning more money and I was in a position earning commissions. So again, every single spare penny that I had just went towards a deposit for the next property.
Just to pause there a moment, because you obviously mentioned about that being a HMO, and HMOs have become increasingly popular, I suppose. Certainly in my experience of advising investors and what have you. How did you find the process at the time in terms of, because you have to be licensed and things like that, but, you know, I'm presuming that's something that you read up on. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So, you know, all those years ago, the landscape of HMOs was very different to what it is now. There's a lot more legislation and compliance involved in buying and running a HMO. But even, you know, back then, you know, in Leeds, where this particular property is, the local requirements are 5 or more unrelated individuals. It has to be a licensed property. Back then as well, the team at the council had been very helpful. You know, they'd come out to the property, giving me advice on what I needed to do to get that property up to standard. I'd done, you know, read books, training. Part of your application when you apply for a license is you have to do the local council's training on HMOs so that you understand what your requirements and obligations are as a license holder. But, you know, it can be quite a scary process to go through, because even though there's a set of requirements for a HMO license, it's, you know, every house is different. So you have to be able to apply that information to your property. And, it, you know, it's about working with the council. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that my house was safe, and the requirement with the HMO license is their priority is fire safety. So it's just making sure that the people in the property are safe in the event of a fire. And I think, you know, you've got to look at it like that, but it's also not just about doing the minimum. It's also thinking about, you know, what would I do if a tenant of mine died in a property? You know, have I done as much as I could do with that property to guarantee the safety?
I know from the various videos and pictures and things like that I've seen of yours, like, that you love knocking down walls and reconfiguring space and
yes,
things like that. And some of the videos of your projects are amazing in terms of transformation, and something I would personally probably struggle with the vision for that. But I suppose my question is, at that stage in your journey, your best part of a decade ago, did you have that confidence in terms of that reconfiguration because of your father's background in building, or is that something that's sort of come later on?
I've always had it. It's definitely increased over the years with confidence, the more projects that you do with this. But I think absolutely it's a skill to be able to look at any space and imagine all the different options that are available. And it's not just looking at a space of what can you do with the space, but it's also figuring out what is the most effective use of this space. So if you're looking at a particular property, it's applying the right strategy to that property. What does the local area need? So it's not just, you know, what can we do with the space and make it beautiful? It's actually what is the need in the area, and also how can we maximise the return from that particular space or property?
Okay. So I'm going to fast forward a couple of years, because obviously you mentioned about being in employment and obviously saving all of this money. And I think when we first met, you were at a stage where you were still employed, but actually you very much had the aspiration of leaving employment and doing this full
yes.
time. That's a big step for someone? You know, I know a lot of people who do property development that they very much rely on, I've got this income from my business or my employment or whatever. I can imagine that was pretty scary. Do you just talk us through that sort of process of actually I'm going to leave this position where I'm earning however much you were earning and just solely, you know, becoming a property investor. Just talk us through that.
Sure. I'm actually really glad you've asked this question because no one's ever asked this question of me before. So it's quite interesting that you kind of thinking about that. And it really, at the time, I had no worries and no fear. And it actually resonated a lot with when I bought that first property that everyone was telling me, you know, why would you leave this amazing job that you've got with all these perks and the car and the security, et cetera, et cetera. But it was the right thing for me to do at that time. You know, this is something at that point, you know, it'd been 12 years in the making that I've been working and building up to this point to be in a position to be able to leave a job and do something that I absolutely love and be able to do that full time and make an income from it. But what I wasn't prepared for was when I left employment and was working for myself, is although I had actually been in a job which effectively I was a remote worker, so I was really used to working from home. I'd done that for 7 years. I'm an only child, so I can spend plenty of time on my own. I'm a self-starter. I can literally even put me in a room for 12 hours and I will work really, really hard. That is not the issue. What I found very strange, and it's actually only the last year or so that I actually feel like I've transitioned into a business owner, is getting out of that day to day of thinking like an employee in a business of I need to be sat in front of my desk from 9 till 5 during the day and feeling guilty if I take any time out for myself, albeit I work evenings and weekends. It was actually very difficult to change, you know, that mindset and actually move that way. Even little things like, it was only a year ago I actually got rid of all my old work clothes because it was like, essentially I'm not wearing suits when I go to site and visit these grotty properties. Like, well, I thought, why am I keeping these clothes, you know? So actually it's been a really long transition period. It wasn't scary leaving the job and you know, doing this full time. It was kind of working through that and just getting used to a new routine. And the other thing that was really important for me, because it is just me in the business, I have a lot of interactions with all the different people that I work with. However, what was really, really helpful and has been helpful for me is to go out and network and meet other business owners and other people in the industry. And actually, over time, you start to form these friendships with people, but you're with other business owners that it doesn't matter what the business is, what industry it is, we're effectively facing very similar problems. And actually being in a room with other people where you can share ideas, you can problem solve, that was really instrumental to me, especially in those early years, being part of those kind of little communities.
So you wake up morning after you've given up your job, and what do you do? It's a complete change of routine, you know. What you know, and I think you're someone naturally who has motivation, and you know, you don't need that sort of routine to motivate you. But I can imagine this strange experience of going, well, what am I going to do with my day today? Because you've already got your existing properties, which presumably are, to a large extent, managing themselves and what have you. What do you write a business plan? Do you read a book?
So you're going to laugh when you hear my answer to this. So the day after I, you know, finished work, I actually took a month off. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do anything work related. I took a month off. You know, we went away a couple of times during that period. I just enjoyed being at home and just gave myself some time to really think, because the job I'd been in previously was very intense. There was a lot of working away from home, a lot of travels, a lot of busyness. And I find that even now, the best time for me when I come up with my best ideas or I solve those problems that have been an issue are those times where I have a little bit of time to myself. Now, it could be the classic, you're in the shower and your mind's just allowed to wander, but also when I'm on holiday and I just have that time to just sit and let my mind wander. So I had a month off and didn't do anything. But that's the beauty of property, because I had the properties, they were bringing in the income, and I didn't, you know, I had the luxury to be able to do that. And that's what's wonderful about property when you get it right.
Going back to something that you said earlier about obviously you've been in a work environment, albeit remote working and things like that. I think being a business owner, particularly someone who, you know, you were working from home and things like that, did you ever find it lonely?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the short answer. Albeit I am used to spending a lot of time on my own. That's why a big part of my business and the time that I spend is going out, networking, working with other businesses, supporting other businesses. You know, if they're holding events, etc., you know, I'll go to those events. I'll support my, you know, my new friends that are also business owners. So it can be very easy to get locked into this bubble, you know, within the business. But for me, it's really important to spend some time outside of that.
Yeah. Okay. So you take that journey and you quit your job and you go into property and you have this time out and did you form a strategy? Did you form a plan? Right. This is what the next 12 months, this is what the next 3 years looks like. Just sort of talk us through how you plan to grow that from however many properties you had at the time to what you've got now.
Absolutely. So, you know, that month that I took off, a big part of that was really starting to plan out what the next 12 months to 5 years would look like and how I would achieve those goals, what I would need to do to achieve those goals. So a big part of my business is working with my clients who are investors. So all my projects are funded by investors. So, you know, going out and finding more investors. But in particular, because my model before that was all about building the HMO portfolio to allow me to quit my job, you know, generate the monthly cash flow. That's great. But that wasn't really what I enjoyed. The you know, I wanted to do more of the development. So that's where a lot of the work then started to look at, like, okay, how can I do that? What would that look like? But, you know, life being life, through so many curveballs, after that time, my partner became quite ill. He had to go into hospital for an operation. That was really worrying. You know, we got him back on his feet. Then my health, it went undiagnosed for a really long time, but I became quite ill and eventually found out I have celiac disease, which is an autoimmune condition. But before I was diagnosed with that, my health got so bad at one point that I actually was working on a plan to close down the business because I just wasn't well enough to keep it running, let alone even think about growing the business. So, you know, goals and planning are great, but, you know, it doesn't take into account these huge things that happen in life. I also had another business partner at the time that we were going to grow almost like a subset, you know, property business. He decided that he no longer wanted to go ahead with that. So again, that had been part of the plan that then was no longer happening. So there was so much going on in that first 2 years. And then we had COVID, which brought its own unique set of challenges as well. So, but that's being a business owner, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to face challenges and some you can foresee, some you can't. I mean, you can foresee COVID and the concerns that arise out of that from the property market. We'll come back to that. Obviously, your health, that was completely unforeseen issues. What have you learned from that, though, in terms of your experience and, you know, have you got any takeaways in hindsight?
I think the biggest thing is having that belief and that tenacity to keep going and just not to quit. There's always a solution to a problem. It's just you might have to bang on a lot of doors to find the answer and find the people that can help you. And I suppose that's true of life. And don't get me wrong, there was very dark periods in that time where I didn't want to continue with what I was doing because it was so hard. But obviously, I'm glad that I did. And when you reflect on it and you think, you know, those really, really hard times, actually, when you're dealing with a problem now and you think, this is easy because I've been through so much worse than this. And it gives you that confidence and that drive to keep going.
You mentioned COVID. I suppose as a property developer, property investor, you probably face a slightly different set of issues than some people will have faced, you know, people who have been put on furlough and things like that, slightly different thing for you. What were the challenges for you during that period?
I mean, COVID for me just blew a massive hole in my business, and I'm still feeling and dealing with the effects of it today, and no doubt we'll be dealing with it for a few more years. Yeah. In that very first lockdown, especially, I was doing a really big project at the time, and the guys that were working with me and myself included were not eligible for any kind of financial help from the government. So there was a massive sense of responsibility I felt at the time to keep this project going, because, you know, at the time I had 20, 30 people I felt were relying on, you know, that income. They had families and mortgages to pay and all of that. So that, from a personal perspective, was really, really stressful. And also from a funding point of view, this particular project relied upon development finance for the refurbishment of the property, and the company I was working with, they didn't have or couldn't get the money that was promised to me to do the project because of COVID. And that was incredibly stressful because I had to find the money elsewhere, because anyone who's in property knows that, what, you know, if you have to stop a project partway through and then try and restart it again, it's very difficult to get everybody back to finish the project. That was incredibly stressful. And we were also working in a new way of working. You know, we didn't really know what COVID was then. We didn't know how contagious it was. So it was working with the guys of what they were comfortable with. You know, luckily the project was a very large project, so we could almost divide the property up into areas. So we just had one person working in an area. We did shifts, so some people would do evenings and weekends, so we didn't have people coming into contact. So that was a completely new challenge for me. And then as the other side of the business, as a landlord, that's been incredibly challenging over the last few years. Obviously, initially, we had the issues where some tenants just weren't able to pay the rent. So to begin with, it was the commercial tenants. They eventually got their grants from the government so they could catch up with their rent. But then we had the issues with you couldn't evict tenants for a certain period of time. And what I saw in that period, and it's really hard as a landlord because, you know, we think of landlords as, you know, people who buy houses and they rent the properties out to people, and it's their duty to make sure that property is compliant and it's safe for somebody to live with, and that's where it stops. You know, the number of tenants I had with mental health issues during that period, or certainly for the following 2 years, you know, dealing with tenants who weren't paying their rent for legitimate reasons, whether it was alcohol, drug addiction, gambling addiction, you know, a tenant who tried to commit suicide, you know, that human aspect in business of, you know, there was a point where I was nearly £50,000 in arrears, like rent arrears. Now, I'm not a massive, I don't have hundreds of properties, like £50,000, but also I'm not getting paid at that time either, because there was no, you know, help from the government, you know, of, you know, I've got people in my property that I can't evict, that are having mental health issues. How do I keep the business going? And it was just beyond stressful, because it's not only a business that you've taken over a decade to build, and you want to build it even more, but at that moment in time, you just want to keep it afloat and keep it going. But then you're also dealing with that moral and social situation of how can I help the people living in my properties that are going through these mental health issues as well.
I think you touch on a really important point here, politically and sort of socioeconomically, which is there is a perception that landlords are very wealthy and they do very well for themselves, and you know, that certainly can be the case, of course. But it's not all plain sailing, and you know, with some of the changes that have come in around taxation and interest rates, and as you say, you know, around non-payment of tenants and, you know, the changes around Section 21 and things like that that are proposed, it can be very challenging for you. And I think in terms of a process for you, in terms of managing that risk and identifying tenants, what do you go through where you can to sort of mitigate that problem?
So as difficult as the last few years have been with COVID and all the different challenges it brought, I think what I try and do within the business is look at any problem or challenge as a potential opportunity. So how can I use that? How can I learn from it to make sure this doesn't happen again and to protect the business, and also look at, is there a positive side? Is there a way that we can, you know, improve the business, you know, somehow? So in terms of the funding side of things, yes, that was an anomaly in terms of the funder and COVID. But now I have a different process when I'm looking at working with development finance and bridging companies, almost, I suppose, a bit of an interview process of them, of understanding where's that money coming from, what happens in this situation, et cetera, et cetera. With the tenants, again, a complete overhaul and review of the tenants that I would consider in an application. And I think it's important to point out that actually before COVID, you know, for over 10 years, I'd been renting properties out and I'd only ever had one tenant, you know, being arrears like by 1 month. It was nothing. It wasn't even something, you know, on my radar. It really wasn't something I'd had to deal with. But obviously what I did is reflect, okay, what could I do differently? How could I protect myself? So being more diligent on that due diligence, the background checks, a big thing is a guarantor. So, I mean, I have tenants in their 50s. They still have to provide a guarantor. For me, it's an absolute non-negotiable. Now, having a guarantor doesn't mean they're never going to miss a rent payment, or, you know, you're guaranteed to get that rent back if they do leave. But what it does is it's about putting another layer in that process, another safety net. And also it very quickly sorts the wheat from the chaff. I always get my sayings mixed up. But what it does is, as a business owner, I actually think it's okay, creating a little bit of friction. Because actually, yes, you want to find a tenant really quickly for your property, but actually you want to find the best tenant. So that process I go through, before someone can even look at a property, they have to have satisfied a number of conditions before they can even view it, to make sure that we've got people that are suitable for that property. So yeah, completely rewrote that tenant finding process.
And you made a move as well to commercial and mixed use properties, as well as residential and HMO and things like that. Just sort of describe that transition, and because there's differences there. There's different type of tenants, different type of renovation, different types of issues. So just talk through that.
Absolutely. So around 2018, I decided I really wanted to get into mixed use and commercial development. So I started to buy up mixed use properties, and the first three that I bought, as I say, part commercial and then part residential, and converted the residential part into HMO. So that was then an area that I was comfortable with and I knew what I was doing. And then with the commercial side, started off buying those properties where it was a very small commercial space. I'm very risk averse, so everything that I look at, in the eventuality A, B, C scenario, what would I do? So I focused on finding those commercial spaces that if I couldn't rent them out, they could be easily converted into residential. So just to give me that safety net. But I've not had to do that. These commercial spaces have been brilliant, but it is a completely different way that you attack it. It's a totally different tenant. You know, it's a lot of work in the beginning to get that property right. Again, finding the right tenant. But then once you've got that set up and the tenant's in place, you know, the restrictions on you as a landlord are a lot looser than in the residential sector. Generally, most of my commercial tenants, you know, they will take that lease on and they are responsible for paying the insurance and the repairs. So it just takes the pressure off of you as a landlord. But obviously you are mindful that your due diligence is not necessarily on them as a person. It's looking at that business, and you're having to make that judgment call of, you know, do I think that business is good enough? Do we think they're still going to be able to pay the rent in, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years time? So again, just those parameters are different. But I've absolutely loved, you know, this move into the commercial side. You know, I've done some commercial to residential conversions as well, which have been brilliant. Looking at larger commercial properties, you know, sort of mini industrial estates, you know, where we've got several units, for example. So it's been fantastic. And for me, I've got to keep pushing myself. I'd say for people out there, you know, I've done things quite slowly, like little baby steps. You know, it's still pushing me and I'm still learning, but for me, I'm not one for taking massive jumps. You know, you're not going to find me going and buying the Queen's Hotel, which is next to where we're sat today, you know, maybe in 20 years time. But for me, you know, I started from nothing with my property portfolio. You know, it was all my own money, and I know how hard it was to build that. In the early days, I did a lot of the work physically myself because I didn't have the budget to pay people. So I think when you've gone through it like that, whatever I build, I want to make sure I keep hold of it. I'm not prepared to take a massive risk and, you know, buy a multi-million pound building just yet, because I don't want to put what I've built at risk.
I think, and something we've talked about before, I know that when you are approaching a project and you're looking at properties, you're always planning sort of 2 or 3 different exit options depending on market Absolutely. Conditions and funding and things like that. Just talk us a little bit through, firstly, sort of your process for finding properties and then planning that sort of project plan out as to actually what's the potential exit routes.
You want the secret sauce, don't you, Richard? You want me to give all my secrets up? But no, you're absolutely right. For me, buying a property, I really can't express how important doing that due diligence is, but most importantly, and it's a little bit morbid, is really thinking about from death backwards. So, you know, when I die with that particular property, what do I want to happen to that property? And we kind of move back then to present day. So obviously, if you're buying a property to flip, it's fine. That's a short-term strategy. It's also, you know, really, really, really thinking long-term what you want to do with that property. And albeit, yes, it's really important to have multiple exits. So as I explained earlier on, I had a property that I'd bought and wanted to sell it and couldn't because the market wasn't quite right. It's just as important. So it's just as important to have those other strategies. But, you know, at the same time, you've got to be really clear in your own mind when you're looking for a property to buy what your strategy is. You know, I see a lot of people that will buy a property and they'll say, oh, well, I don't know yet. I was thinking I could do this and I could do that. And it literally gives me anxiety when I'm speaking to them, because I just think, well, how do you know, you know, what you're expecting to make from that property, how much it's going to cost to get it up to that standard? You know, it's just kind of a bit mad. So I think you know, you've got to really clear in your mind what it is you're trying to achieve, what that initial, you know, your exit A is going to be. And yes, you know, you want to have other exits there available to you because you don't know what's around the corner. But you have to have that clarity and do that due diligence, that work. And it's boring. You know, I spend hours and hours when I'm looking at a property to buy and analysing, you know, all of the things that could go wrong. And obviously, you know, COVID is a perfect example that, you know, I had HMOs in my portfolio that initially were rented to students. And what we found when COVID hit was actually students were then staying at home for a short period and studying at home. So we didn't think there was going to be that need for these properties to be rented to students. Like, that just kind of disappeared overnight. But fortunately, we bought properties that were also in areas where there were families and also there were still young professionals that wanted to live in those areas. So those were, you know, those backup strategies. Now, that didn't last very long with the students. It's kind of bounced back because most students don't want to be at home anyway. They want kind of that university life. But, you know, you've got to take that into account and also think about the property that you buy in that area, especially if you're buying to hold for a long time. what's that? What do you think that area is going to be like in 10 or 15 years' time? You know, you've got to be very adaptable, I think, in this game and move with the times.
Okay. So your business name, Lomots, what does that mean and where did it come from?
So Lomot stands for life on my own terms. And it was something I put together when I was establishing the business, and my plan was to leave full-time employment. And I knew that when I was running a business, there were going to be times that were going to be really tough, and I needed something that I could look at that would be literally in front of me, that would remind me what I'm doing, why am I doing it. And a big part of my business and why I wanted to run the business was I wanted to literally do things on my terms, because I've been working in an environment, and in a workplace where there wasn't a lot of movement for me. I didn't feel like my potential was being anywhere near utilized at all. And also to have that flexibility that, you know, if I needed to take some time off, I mentioned earlier, you know, things that happen in life, you know, family members become ill. When my partner was ill, you know, I had to look after him, you know, when he came out of hospital. There was no worrying about, you know, letting my employer know, would it be okay, any of that. It was just, that's what I did. That then became my priority. And for me, a massive luxury with the property business is, it does allow you, if you need to step away and take some time out, it doesn't kind of just crumble straight away. You can take some time out, you can do what you need to do, and then come back to it and keep going.
You say that, but I know from years of knowing you that there's certain times of years, and I think it's typically, say, 1st of July, isn't it?
Yes.
You don't want to speak to anyone because you're just flat out, you know, tensing changeovers and things like that. Just because it's not all plain sailing. I said people think of property as a passive income, and it can be, but as it's not without a hiccup. You get, you know, issues with properties, you get repairs, you get, you know, tenant changeovers, things like that. How do you find all of that? Because when something goes wrong, it needs sorting then, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I love to plan. I love to be organised, and I map out my week and away I go, and something will come in and I have to deal with it there and then. So you have to be adaptable to these things. And you're quite right, once a year with the student properties, we have the changeovers. So everyone moves out on the 30th of June and then the new tenants move in on the 1st of July. So it really is 24 hours. You're up, you're checking tenants out, you handling the repairs, and you're dealing with all of this. Again, Christmas Day last year, I get a call from a tenant, a block drain in the property, it's all coming back into the property, and it's disgusting and awful. And I don't really like the association of passive income when it's associated to property, because even friends of mine that have got property that they've gone out and they've bought what we call like a turnkey property, so something that's ready to be rented out from day one, and it's with an agent, and essentially you would think of that as passive return because you're quite hands-off as a landlord. But you're not really. Legally, you still have a responsibility to make sure that that property is compliant, that certain things are done throughout the year. Again, most agents, if a tenant hasn't paid their rent, it's still down to you as the landlord to initiate the eviction process and chase any rent arrears. So there's still a lot of admin involved. And again, you know, there's certain things, if there was, you know, something structurally wrong or there's a leak with the property, you know, you might have to go and deal with that yourself. So I really don't like the association of passive income with property.
I think that's really, I suppose, what I was getting at. And I think something else that I know that you're passionate about is sort of continuous learning.
Yes.
And you know, it's, property could be a minefield. You know, it's not, you know, when you think about all of the issues around construction and costing and all of that, your legal requirements in terms of, as you say, your ASTs or your planning issues and things like that. But that's very much a journey that you've been on in terms of maximizing your knowledge around not just profitability of property, but different types of structures for property. And you know, I know we've obviously helped you in some creative structures around some of your business, things like that. So just where, how important is that for your success, I suppose?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even this week, the first 3 days of this week, I was at a property event, which was a mix of training, education and networking. So I invest a lot of money and time throughout the year into further development and learning. Now that can be anything from just downloading a book, listening to it in the car on Audible, to paying to go to events and training, and not just property specific, could be business, you know, different business areas. So I think that's massively important. And, you know, I've had the privilege of meeting lots of landlords who've been at this 30, 40 years, but you know, unfortunately, a lot of them have that mindset that, well, what I've been doing this long, you know, what I don't know is not worth knowing. And, you know, I don't personally agree with that, because the world is constantly changing. You know, you look at the energy performance certificates that are coming in, that's a new thing that the government are bringing in, that, you know, you have to make sure that your properties are going to meet those new requirements. So the world is constantly changing. You've got to keep up. So, yeah, for me, constantly learning and development is massively important, because, yes, you can make mistakes. Well, you're going to make mistakes as you go along your property journey, but often those mistakes are incredibly costly in terms of financially and time and also emotionally. So anything that I can do to prevent that happening in the first place, you know, if you can foresee a roadblock that's coming your way, you know, it's just going to save you so much time, money, headache, stress, and just allow you to sort of seamlessly, you know, put a diversion in place and not have to deal with it in the first place.
It's a very valid point, not just in your sphere, but I think business in generally, is that people learn far more from their mistakes than they do from their successes. Do you mind saying some of the mistakes that you think that you've made in hindsight?
Absolutely. I mean, what's that saying? You know, you don't know what you don't know. I think one of the biggest things I've learned, and it's very hard as humans for us to do this, and this is all comes down to accountability. So in property, there's lots of moving parts. We're working with lots of different people, solicitors, mortgage brokers, builders, you know, professionals. And when something goes wrong, it's really, really easy to point the finger and say, well, you know, that deal collapsed because the mortgage broker didn't do what they should have done, or this renovation went over budget and over schedule. It was the builder's fault. No, the hard truth is it's my fault. As the developer, as the investor, it's my money, it's my business. The buck stops with me. And actually, the day that I decided to take full accountability for everything in the business, I turned a massive corner in my business and everything completely changed. So I'm probably more involved with each sort of power team member. I ask a lot more questions. I also understand that, you know, you, for example, you're giving me the best advice that you can, but you don't have access to all of my business to actually know, with the greatest respect, how that will impact yeah. other areas of the business. It's just not possible. So I have to just be, you know, in my little bubble there, and I have to make the decision that's right for me as the business owner. Doesn't mean necessarily I'm taking that person's advice, but I have to take accountability for all of the decisions that I make.
I think speaking personally, when you when you're a client of ours, you're incredibly easy to deal with and actually give us you give us really good quality instructions, but that actually makes things easier and smoother for us, because we have that bigger picture. And you're right, we get as professional advisors, not just us, but I'm talking generally, but professional advisors, we don't have the full picture. You know, we don't know what advice or what we're doing, how that fits into that jigsaw puzzle.
Absolutely, and
having that, as you say, accountability and that visibility, and actually asking for the advice or opinions is, in my view, and I think across business, something that's really, really important. There'll be people listening to this who might be quite early in their property journey or have aspirations to become involved in property, what would be your sort of top tips?
So my top tips, and these don't really marry with each other, so you've got to take a little bit from one side and a little bit from the other side. So the first one I would say is to really do your research on what you're doing. So I think the challenge, especially when people come into money and they think, right, I'm going to use that money and buy a property, is they can sometimes rush into it and not make great decisions. And I go back to the analogy that I mentioned earlier of really thinking about at the point at which you die and then work backwards to where you are today, is really thinking, what is the reason for buying a property in the first place? Like, what is the end goal? You know, are you looking to build a portfolio, leave your job, have that cash flow? Are you looking to leave a legacy to your kids, for example? Because that all has a massive bearing on actually how you actually structure your business to begin with. And I've found for me, you know, if you don't structure it correctly in the beginning, it's very difficult to kind of pick at it and restructure it in the future. So again, it's a little bit boring, but you've got to be really clear in your own mind of what it is that you're trying to achieve, what that looks like in the future, and work backwards from there. And do as much research as you can. You know, today more than ever, there's so many resources out there, especially that are either free or cost very little. So whether it's books, reading, you know, workshops, YouTube videos, there's so much content out there to really help you learn. And also, if you can be in a position to spend some time with somebody that's doing something that you'd like to do and learn from them, I mean, that's absolutely invaluable to be able to kind of see it for yourself. You know, and obviously there's loads of courses out there as well that you can do. So it's, you know, I'd say you need to really think carefully about what it is, because especially when you're buying a property, you know, even the cheapest properties out there, you're still having to put £30,000-£40,000 into it. That's a lot of money to invest in an asset that isn't liquid. You know, if you decide it's not for you, it's very difficult to get that money back out. I've worked with clients on a learn and earn program where they've invested money in a project in exchange to shadow me on those projects. And, you know, the number of clients that do that, and at the end they go, do you know what? That looks really difficult. It's not for me. I'm not going to do it. But do you know what? What a great exercise, because you've lost nothing other than a bit of time spent. You know, they could have put that money into a property and potentially lost it all, you know. So there's that side to it. But then there's also the flip side that, you know, being good at this requires you to take massive action. You know, I speak to a lot of people over a number of years, every time I see them, oh, I'm going to get into property. They will talk about it for years and years and years and never do anything about it.
I'd probably fit into that category.
Do you, Richard? We might need to have a conversation another time. But, you know, that's absolutely true. You know, I have two mentors and coaches that I work with, because having somebody there that accountability, for example, you know, I don't want to let them down in every 2 weeks when I meet them, you know, that's a very powerful thing to have. But again, I work with clients that I will coach them, and that helps to kind of move them along in that process, because especially when you're working full time, carving out that time outside of work to focus on building a portfolio is really, really difficult, unless you're that personality type that's really good at, you know, scheduling your time and sticking to it. There's always 101 other things pulling your attention. So, as I say, it takes massive action and being very disciplined to put that time aside and spend the time building this property portfolio, you know, what you want to do with it. And being successful with it. So it's, as I say, it's scary, but it's all about, they say, fortune favors the brave, you know, having the guts to take that step and to do it.
You mentioned something there which I think is important, and I know from the advice work that we do, that getting the foundations in terms of your structure of your portfolio and your aims is incredibly important. Because on the flip side, and we see this with sort of generational portfolios and things like that, moving property around and changing ownership and moving it between different companies, can be very difficult and costly. You know, you've got mortgages to consider, you've got capital gains tax to consider, inheritance tax, things like that. So absolutely, it's critical, and you do need to surround yourself with the best advisors, you know, tax, legal, slightly self-serving, mention that, except that. but it's a really important point. What's next for you?
Oh, I've got lots of exciting things planned for the next 12 months. So, you know, aside from the property business, buying and developing more properties, I'm also in the process of writing a book, which is all about my experience as a landlord. So it's going to be very entertaining. So for even for people who are not in property, there's lots of, you know, silly stories in there that should hopefully make people laugh. But there's also a lot of learning in there. So people that are looking to, you know, invest in property themselves, you know, those little takeaway things of what maybe you can learn from my experience and not make the same mistakes that I have. I've also got a new website launching later this year. And also one of the things I'm really passionate about is encouraging more women to get into property, not because I like to bash men, but just because, which I don't like to bash men. But what I've found over the years is a lot of people that have approached me are women who are struggling with the confidence to invest in property because it's just, it's a different world. You know, it's very male dominated. They have the money to invest. They know how to do it. They understand the theory, but, you know, they're nervous about getting into that. And I've been very fortunate that my career previously has always been male dominated. You know, at the age of 21, I was on building sites with engineers, with drilling boreholes and doing that. So I know it can be a different language. And for a lot of women, they're quite nervous about literally walking onto a building site, you know, and how they're going to be made to feel. So I'm really passionate about that. I'm going to be holding in-person events. I also do the online webinars for women. And as I say, it's not about bashing men. It's actually about helping women to learn how to navigate this world. Because as much as we like to think we live in a world of equality, we don't. But I think most businesses would say that if, you know, we've got a better balance of women to men ratio, you know, studies have shown that we have, you know, businesses are more profitable, they're more efficient. So I really want to help women kind of break into property and to enjoy it and to get the most out of it. And certainly, you know, a lot of the men that I work with within property, they seem to like working with women. We bring a different energy. It's not better or worse, it's just different, and it just brings a little bit of balance. So lots of really good, exciting stuff for the next 12 months.
I could sit and talk to you about all of these things all day. So we may end up having to do a part two at some point. We have something of a closing tradition. And I've got two questions for you. One, you've kind of answered. And that is, if you, it's said that everyone has a book in them. If you were to write a book, what would it be? But I think you've kind of answered
there
this already.
Perfectly.
The second, though, is if young Sarah, you know, 18, 21 years old, if you were to give that person some advice now, looking back with hindsight, what would it be?
It'd be two pieces of advice. One would be, worry less. It's all going to be okay. It's probably a lot worse in your head than the reality is, and you've got it within you. Whatever life throws at you, you can make it good. And two would be, I wish I'd gone harder sooner. I wish I'd pushed myself even earlier, because the thing is with property, especially with property, the sooner you start, the more fruitful it will be. So I really wish I'd done even more from a younger age.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Been really interesting. I said maybe a part two at some point, but it's always a pleasure to deal with you. And thank you very much for all of the wisdom and expertise you've shared today.
No problem.
And we can share your contact email information in the clips to this video, and you know, you might get some people contacting you looking for some mentoring, and I know that's something that you offer. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Richard.
So, this has been the Business Compass podcast, the business focused podcast to help give you direction and focus. This podcast was brought to you by Ice and Harrison Solicitors. If you found the content interesting and insightful, we'd really appreciate your support by hitting the follow or subscribe buttons on whatever platform you're using. Thank you very much for listening.